Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Dominator.
Here's John Williams.
That's my nickname for the newsman. This is John. It's 109. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. What a great day to be here, and what a great day to be wherever you are, too, I hope. We're here until 3 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. You can call or text the show at any time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and the text line. 312-981-7200. Chime in whenever you like. I get to talk to Doma T. Pongo on Saturdays with Joe Brand on sports and Griffin Filipich, our Saturday producer. How are you, Doma T?
I'm good.
Filling in for Steve Bertrand, I guess, a little bit today, huh?
I am.
Okay. So are you with me till 3, or are we doing a switch out here?
We're doing a musical chairs, and then Pam Jones comes in and has the rest of the Bertrand action.
Be nice to hear Pam in a little bit, too. By the way, do you remember when you and Joe and I were talking on Saturday about rare or weird things that people have kept over the years?
Yes.
And Joe had such a great story. I'm going to play that back a little later on the show. After 2 o'clock, we'll ask you to tell us weird, wonderful, or strange things that you've kept. It's all based on the fact that they're auctioning off next month in Beverly Hills a piece of wedding cake from the royal wedding 37 years ago. Whoever it was that got married back then. I've got it. Here it is. It was Prince William and Catherine, Britain's Catherine, the Duchess of Cambridge. When they got married, they had a wedding cake, and somehow the chauffeur got his hands on some of the stuff, so he grabbed it, and then he kept it. That 37-year-old piece of wedding cake is being auctioned off. So then Joe said, oh, you think that's weird? And then he had a great story to tell. My question for you is, what's the weirdest thing that you've kept all these years that maybe has value to you, but nobody else, or maybe does? I don't know. You've got something in the vase, in the lockbox, in the basement, I don't know, in a box in your closet, and it's weird, and I want to know what it is after 2. Violetta, Doma T, you've got time to study and work on that. Hopefully you've got something to offer, but if you don't, that's okay. I don't. I really don't. I've been purging so much lately, I don't really have anything unusual like that.
I was surely going to ask, what did you mention on Saturday? But I don't remember if you mentioned something. You don't have any? I've got something really strange, too. I don't know if I should save it for 2 or tell you now.
Tell me now.
I collect rocks, and I found a really interesting rock on the ground in Africa, and it sits on my living room table right now. It looks like a geode almost. Just a really, I thought it was really cool until people come by and wonder why I have dirt on my living room table.
I've done that too, picked up pebbles and stones from all of our travels, and then I bring them home and I put them in this one place, and then I forget which stone goes with which place.
Right.
So
right.
I don't remember if that was the North Shore of Minnesota or if that was Italy.
And then you're doing spring cleaning and you're like, I'm just going to throw this
out. I know, totally, totally. And then I've thrown them out, just tossed them in the yard because I go, well, these aren't valuable. I love the trip. But in Domati's case, you were in Ghana, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that had a little more meaning to you than just a stone I picked up in the North Sea or something.
Well, I like cool stones no matter where they're from. And I think they're cool until people come point out how lame I am.
All right. A little after 2 o'clock. Thank you, Domati. My wife still has our son's baby teeth in a little jar. And it kind of grosses me out, to be honest with you, because they're little teeth. They're just teeny little teeth. And I know they mean a lot to her. I understand that. But I would not have kept them. But I'll bet she's not alone. After 2 o'clock. The job of Saturday Night Live is to be funny. That's the first job. Their second job is to, I don't know, whatever comedians are supposed to do. I'm not a comic. But make us think, make us reflect, make us angry. I don't know what the purpose of comedy is other than making you laugh. But the first job is to make you laugh. And if you watch Saturday Night Live this Saturday night, I wonder if you thought that the cold open was fun and funny or not. It's that simple. My number is 312-981-7200. It was a mishmash of everything that's been happening in Trump world for the last 3 or 4 days. everybody that has been in Rudy Giuliani and all of them are all making appearances. And the stars that they got to drop in was pretty impressive. Ben Stiller played his attorney, and there was Martin Short as his doctor, and there was Scarlett Johansson and Jimmy Fallon as Ivanka and Jared. And then they actually had Stormy Daniels on the show. And then every cast member had to at least play some part because they were just telling the Trump story. I mean, imagine, here's Donald Trump talking to his attorney, Michael Cohen.
It's Michael Cohen. God, I miss you so much.
Oh, hey, what's up, amigo? How are you holding up in prison?
I'm not in prison.
Oh, well, give it a couple of weeks.
And then there was the president with his doctor, Harold Bornstein.
Bornstein, would you like to know any of my patient's medical history?
Damn it. I'm sorry. I tried to dial Trump Donald, but I dialed Trump doctor.
And then there's the president with his attorney, Cohen. Actually, this is the Trump attorney, Michael Cohen, who gets a call, or he calls, but they're on the phone, Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy, is that you?
Yes, that's right. Giuliani, Trump's lawyer and his worst nightmare.
You do wonder sometimes who Giuliani's really working for, the way he's been doing these crazy talk and news shows. Trump takes a call from Sarah Sanders.
Mr. President, I have lost all credibility. Did you lie to me about the Stormy Daniels affair?
Yeah, that sounds like something I would do.
Okay, good. Just as long as we're on the same page. I'm good to go. See you Monday.
Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani, I mean, he's technically one of his attorneys now, says this about why he wants to hurry things up.
Guys, can we hurry this up? I'm supposed to do 25 more talk show appearances today, and I'm trying to make it like an advent calendar, you know, where I reveal one new crime on each show. So.
Then Michael Cohen takes a call from Melania Trump.
Listen, I have a completely hypothetical question for a friend of mine, okay? If her husband is accused of crime, would she have to testify against him?
No.
But could she? If she want to?
I guess she could.
Oh, my friend would be so happy. Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Wait.
So Mike Pence makes an appearance, not the real Mike Pence, accidentally, in this case, calling Michael Cohen.
Hello?
Hi there, stranger. What's your name?
Mike Pence?
Who is this? I was told this was a party line with no questions asked.
I gotta call you back.
Then there's Trump daughter Ivanka and Trump son-in-law Jared.
This is Ivanka and Jared.
And then there's the real Stormy Daniels.
I know you don't believe in climate change, but a storm's a-coming, baby.
See, that's a good example of what I'm talking about. I don't think that line was that funny. But it was amazing that she was on there, and they were giving it to Team Trump in every conceivable way they can. The innuendo about the vice president, Stormy Daniels, who's an actual player in all of the controversies, and then Hollywood's A-list making cameos, and all of them, sure, trying to be funny, but the agenda was, let's run down the Trump administration.
And they're just cheap shots.
I think they were.
Predictable, and comedy's not fun when it's predictable.
I think that's my point, Violetta. I think SNL's job is to be funny. And I'm on their side. Like, I'm no fan of this administration. And I like Saturday Night Live. And so when they're really funny and they make fun of the administration, I'm in heaven. But when they fail, I'm in hell. I really think they don't, like, if the agenda here is to be funny, but also to get Donald Trump out of office, this actually takes one step back, because this just sort of solidifies the other side. This is proof that Hollywood and the media are against us. And by the way, it wasn't even that funny. You can't even justify it by saying, yeah, but it was hilarious, guys, lighten up. I didn't think it was that funny. And when you're bringing all that firepower and you're missing, then it's pretty evident that you were really trying to do something besides being funny. Okay, that's my assessment of the cold open from Saturday Night Live. You saw it too. My number's 312-981-7200. Tell me if it was funny or tell me if it missed the mark. I'm open to suggestions here. And then we'll visit with Pam Shenaker after 1:30. She is the mom of Matthew Shenaker. And Matthew is that young student. He's a high school kid in Wisconsin who every day since the fall of this school year has worn the same T-shirt. And now the school says he can't wear it. And so now the parents and the young man are suing the school. We'll catch you up on that story after 1:30. This is what happens to me every time I try and embrace the middle. Every time I try and see the other side. Our texts include these. John, ignoring the Stormy Daniels part, that opening to Saturday Night Live was funny. 847, cold open was a scream. Three smile faces. 269, SNL was hilarious. Kate McKinnon is a chameleon. She is that. She played Rudy Giuliani in the skit. John Violetta, it's satire, just not good satire, says Chet. 708, John, you've got to be kidding. The open was unbelievably funny. The Stormy line at the end wrapped it up all together.
But how can it be funny when you know the punchline? We all knew the punchline's coming. There was nothing new, nothing interesting, nothing different.
From 224, Hollywood and the media is against this administration. That's why I know Trump is doing good. Trump 2020. 309 says, she cashed the checks, John. Done. John, it was the best cold open ever. Like I said, I thought it was hilarious, and anybody that disagrees with that is a fool. John, it wasn't funny. Liberals are hurting their position by overplaying their hand. John, so having a president that makes fun of disabled people is okay, right? Sometimes parody stings. Put your big boy pants on, John. John, do you think all of the lampooning of Trump actually works in his favor? You know, his ratings. Well, I'll finish this sentence. I'm not sure if it's true. His ratings went up last week. And it wasn't just him saying that. There was some other reporting. There's a bunch of rating services out there, and I'm told to believe that he actually ticked up a little bit last week. John, funniest open ever. Lifelong Republican here who voted for Johnson. 618, did not find it funny. Agree, cheap shots. Michelle Wolf, on the other hand, was great. Oh, man, well, I didn't see that coming. Her stand-up show is hilarious. 630, Saturday's cold open was funnier than most of this season's cold opens. They have all been mean-spirited, more that than satirical. And finally, John, lighten up. SNL has too much to sift through each week to do justice to just one Trump subject. If they praised Trump, his backers would still find something wrong, says you. And the cold open from SNL. I thought that Weekend Update was pretty good. And also, later in the week, we'll talk a little bit about Donald Glover. Was Donald Glover the host this week? That was from this weekend, right, Olive?
Yes.
And his new song and video, America, is something to see. Whew. Have you watched that? Have you seen the America song and video? Because it's really good. I think the music's good. I think it's thought-provoking. And it is jarring. It's just jarring. And it's really saying something that I cannot quite put my finger on. Olaf and I are riding the elevator down, and I said, okay, I know that that happened, and I know that that happened, but what's the bottom line here? And maybe it will require a third and fourth viewing before I come to terms with it. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page if that's easier for you. It'll be on my Facebook page, let's say after the 1:30 news, and then we'll talk more about that this week. So the mom whose son has, since the fall, been wearing a T-shirt to school every day, and it pretty much has the same message with the same imagery. And finally, the school said you have to stop, so now they're suing the school. What's the T-shirt? What's the mom have to say? And what do you have to say? It's John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, overlooking the beautiful street and flowers. Hope you're having a nice day. Hope you had a great weekend. Boy, did we need a nice weekend. And by and large, that wasn't bad. The song that I was talking about by Childish Gambino, This Is America, we're posting. We're trying to figure out exactly what the language is I'm going to put with my post. I think I said to you, Elif, on the way down in the elevator that I thought that song was, I found that song really good, really entertaining, really creative, and really jarring. But I want to know what you think about it, and we'll get some expert opinion about it later in the week. So something like that, Elif. Post something like that. And go ahead and let us know when you get that up, okay?
Will do.
Yeah, yeah. Childish Gambino. A.K.A., well, Childish Gambino's his stage name. He's Donald Glover. Oh, yeah, and also that piece of cake that we were talking about from the royal wedding was Charles and Diana, right? Do the math on that. It's 1:37. So there's this young man in Wisconsin, goes to school in a public school about an hour north of Madison. And he's been in the habit of wearing a T-shirt or a series of T-shirts that reflect the same sort of belief. In the case of the T-shirt I'm looking at, this high school student has his T-shirt on, and the word that is printed on the front of the T-shirt is love, L-O-V-E. But the L is a handgun turned sideways, and the O is actually a hand grenade, and the V is two, looks like military knives, and then the E looks like one of those AK-47s. It's a machine gun, and it's turned to the side so that the handles form the arms of the E, L-O-V-E, spelled out in guns or weapons. And after Parkland, the school principal asked him to stop wearing it. And that's where the story begins. His mom's on a phone line. Pam Scheneker, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN Radio. How are you, Pam?
I am doing well.
Does he wear that T-shirt every day or a series of T-shirts that just sort of reflect gun ownership?
He wears different T-shirts. It's not just those ones, but he does own three. The one that you just talked about was the love one, and then there's another one that has different guns on it that says "Celebrate Diversity."
Right.
And then he also has another one that says "Second Amendment," has two different guns on it. But he does wear different T-shirts. It's not just those ones that he wears.
Oh, I see. So some days he doesn't wear a gun-centric T-shirt, right?
Right.
Okay, fair enough. But he wears these often enough. It caught the attention of the faculty or staff. The principal told him to stop wearing the T-shirt. And what happened then?
Well, throughout the whole year, he's been wearing these T-shirts. And, he had a couple of teachers that would say, I don't think those are school appropriate. But, we made sure, we checked the handbook and just, made sure that there wasn't anything in there that specifically stated that he couldn't wear T-shirts with weapons on them, which there wasn't, and so Matthew would tell these teachers, well, it's not in the handbook. My mom and I and my dad, we all looked in the handbook and, made sure that that wasn't in there. But, and they pretty much left him alone after that at the beginning of the year. But it was right after the Parkland shooting when he really started having problems, and the principal was telling him, you can't wear these to school anymore, and, just cover it up or, not wear them at all. And then recently, probably like middle of March, roughly, is when the principal said, you know what, if you're going to wear these T-shirts, you're going to have to face disciplinary action. And that's when he decided that Matthew was going to be put in a cubicle at school if he chose to wear the T-shirts.
What do you mean a cubicle?
It's a very small little room. I can't even tell you exactly how big it is, but it's big enough for like a small desk and a chair and, a wiggle room for like one or two more people. But the door is closed and he had to sit in there with the door closed. He couldn't even have lunch with his friends.
Is that in school detention or suspension?
The principal never really elaborated on that part. He just said disciplinary actions and it'll be a cubicle.
Well, were they teaching him, or was he still getting his assignments and still quote unquote learning, or was he just?
He was not receiving any teacher instruction whatsoever when he was in there. I mean, he would get his assignments, if he had assignments, they would be brought to him. But if he didn't know how to do the assignments, he had no teacher instruction.
How many days? How long did that happen? How many days?
It was 2 days in a row where they actually tried to do that. And that's when we contacted an attorney and said, hey, you know what? This is really affecting my child's education, and I don't want this happening anymore. And that's when we had John Monroe, our attorney, start the process of you know, what's going on now, because we've talked to the principal actually quite a few times before that and said, hey, you know what, it's not in the handbook. You can't tell them you can't wear it. It's not promoting violence whatsoever. So how can you discipline my child for something if it's not in your handbook? So, you know, we actually had to sit down face-to-face conversations with the principal about this before we actually contacted the attorney about filing a lawsuit.
I understand why he's I get the message that he's uncomfortable with, but how does he justify it? Was there some vague language in the handbook that he was able to justify it with? I mean, how does he...
Actually, their attorney, and I'm not sure if he actually talked to their attorney or not, but he would tell my son, hey, you know what? The handbook says that I have discretionary, purposes, and I can say what I want, you know, basically. And he would tell my son, hey, you know what? I've talked to my attorneys about this, and my attorney said that I can do this and I can do that. So that's kind of where it was at. He said that, you know, if in the handbook it states that he can make his own decisions, which of course, you know, really can't. I mean, if he's not promoting violence, there's no reason why he can't wear the t-shirts.
Well, I'll let a judge or jury resolve that. But, you know, it almost sounds to me like there's two issues there. One is this First Amendment issue that your son and the school are fighting over about the t-shirt. And then the other one is the sort of punishment or in-school suspension that they can find him to. I'm troubled.
Not that I've had it, but I've experienced something similar. I don't think that is that rare.
Oh, really? Putting the kid in a cubicle all day long like that?
Well, I think it's how you describe it, but I've been put off to the side in the principal's office for an entire day, and you do your work from there, and it's supposed to be a quiet reflection, but you know you're being punished. That's the part here that's a little bit different. You knew what you're in there for, and you know... It's an in-school suspension.
You told me off the air, Pam.
I can understand if they want to discipline him for something that he did wrong, but he did nothing wrong. I mean, he's a very good student. He's never had problems with school. And in fact, in the handbook, it even states in there that for a child to be put into this sort of cubicle, there needs to be a threat. You know, he has to be a threat to somebody at school. Or a threat to their property or anything like that, which he never, ever once displayed at all, anywhere, not even at school, not at home, or anything.
Your family owns guns and shoots, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the video I saw on, I think it was CBS, you guys are at a range and you're all doing target shooting. Your son did have I don't know what that gun was. I don't know that machine gun's the right way to describe it, but it looked like an AR-15 or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yep, AR-15, and we have pistols also. It's, you know, hunting rifles. You know, we have a variety of weapons that we do bring, and we go target shooting. And
what do you make of the argument that maybe you guys have a legal right to wear the shirt, but in sensitivity to everybody else after Parkland, say, it would be a nice thing for you all to do to acquiesce to the principal's wishes? What do you make of that?
I totally understand that point of view. And, you know, our hearts break and we pray for these people that lost their lives and their families. But at the same time, everybody is expecting my son to change who he is. And, you know, that's just part of him. You know, he's always done target shooting. He's gone hunting with my husband and his brothers. And, you know, I mean, so everybody's expecting him to change who he is based on what's happening in another part of the country or the world, in fact. And the list could go on and on about things that people are sensitive about, and you know, like I said, I understand that, but where do we draw the line when it comes to that? Because that's just my son. That's who he is. He's not a violent person at all.
I can understand, Pam, though, why somebody might say, nobody's saying you guys can't shoot or enjoy guns or exercise your Second Amendment right, but I mean, this doesn't change who you are. This changes a t-shirt. And we're all comfortable with and familiar with school dress codes these days. You can't wear certain baseball caps tilted a certain way with certain
face
logos
paint
on
sometimes.
There.
It's certain colors.
I mean, there's nothing new about, you know.
Right. And those are all symbols of gang violence and such, which my son is no part of.
You understand so my point,
that,
though, right?
That would be my argument against that. I mean, yes, I totally understand what you're saying. But this is Matthew. That's what he chooses to wear. That's his clothing, and it's not promoting violence. And I'm sorry. I think we live in a world where people are offended by a whole host of things. And
well, you don't think this. You don't
understanding and realizing that there's different points of view out there. And just because our family and my son has a different point of view than other people, you can't expect him to change because of, you know, of something that happened elsewhere in the country.
Right. Now, your son is still able to go to school, and he's, in fact, now still able to wear the T-shirts because of an injunction. And until we get, a court decision on this, which, frankly, when the appeals process is done on this, I think your son will have graduated by then. But at least for the time being, your son is able to wear the T-shirt and is wearing the shirt, right?
Yes.
He's at school right now,
and he does wear them.
He's at school right now, and he's wearing the shirt right now?
I'm not sure what T-shirt he wore to school this morning, but he does wear them, you know, a couple times a week he does.
Okay, one last question. I need to take a break, and I'd like some of our listeners to ask some questions, too. But what do his friends say? Do they see him as being ornery here, you know, just brooking for a fight, or are they on his side? What sort of reaction is our family?
His friends 100% support him, and they know that Matthew is, I mean, if you've seen the interviews that Matthew has done, he's very soft-spoken. And that's who he is all the time. You know, that's just who he is. And he has friends that totally support him, but he also has students at the school that aren't necessarily his friends that don't support him and think that we're going after the school for very stupid reasons, and some people actually think we're going after them financially, which isn't the case at all.
Yeah.
We just want him to be able to practice his First Amendment right and be able to wear what he wants so long as it's not promoting violence or harming anybody.
Pam Scheneker's on a phone line. It's her son Matthew we're talking about. He goes to a public high school a little bit north of Madison, and this T-shirt, which spelled out the word love, he has other ones, but they celebrate gun ownership. And because he was wearing them, the principal said, all right, then we're going to stick you in this little cubicle. You can't wear the shirts anymore, particularly after Parkland. Now they're fighting it in court, and the young man is able to wear the T-shirts right now. So I'm asking you what you think. Yes. 153. This is America. America. Talk more about that song later in the week, but right now we're talking about the story in Wisconsin where a young man wants to wear a T-shirt that celebrates gun ownership and guns, and in the case of one of them, hand grenades and knives. The school says you can't wear it. We don't like it after what happened in Florida. The mom and the son and their attorney say this is a First Amendment issue. He gets to wear the T-shirt. The school handbook, in fact, does not preclude him wearing one that has guns on it. Your texts include these. John, the kids' clothes are making him disruptive to other students, so they have the right to stop him from wearing it. From 219, Parkland just happened. Don't wear the shirt. 773, this mother's in denial. My God, get him help. Don't enable this disrespectful, dangerous behavior. From 630, tell this lady to grow up. Don't wear clothes with weapons. 815 says our district calls it alternative learning environments for infractions of school's disciplinary code. And from 847, is this kid going to college next year? Don't wear the T-shirt if they tell you not to. I'm sure there are some of you out there that are on their side, but you haven't texted me yet. And yet Pam says that she's getting a lot of support from the young man's family and friends, it sounds like. Pam, we're back on the air now. Just your general reaction to some of those texts. What do you say?
Well, everybody has their own opinions on the case, which I respect. But as far as my son being disrespectful towards anybody, I really don't think that's the case at all. He's very respectful of his teachers and his principal and such. And, you know, like he even said to the principal, too, you know, he goes, well, I could understand if my T-shirts were promoting violence or you know, something like that. He goes, of course I wouldn't wear them. And, you know, we even asked the principal, you know, several times, please tell me how his T-shirts are promoting violence. And, you know, he was never able to answer that question for us.
If the handbook said no guns on T-shirts, what would your position be then?
If there was a policy regarding that and said no guns on T-shirts whatsoever, he never would have been sent to school with anything like that.
Hey, Justin, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? Hi, Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, you're on the air.
First off, yes, I understand. First off, I have had battles with the Illinois school systems under freedom of speech and freedom to wear what I would like back in the 80s when I was in school. And I'll tell you, they're going to take you to the hoops. They're going to call you all kinds of names. They're going to make your life miserable. You need to keep fighting the good fight.
What do you say about that, Pam?
I totally agree with that. We're already receiving a lot of backlash for it. Both on social media, and my son gets ridiculed on a daily basis at school. And, you know, we've asked him, you know, what he wants to do. And he's like, well, Mom, I want to keep going forward with this. And, you know, kids can ridicule me all they want. He goes, but I understand the Constitution. I understand my First Amendment, right? He goes, and I understand that they have the same thing, you know, that as far as their opinions go. So, you know, we're just going to keep going about it. And
fair enough. Justin, thanks for the call. Tony, jump in there. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, John?
Good.
I think this is absolutely absurd. I mean, the previous caller just said that he went to school in the 80s. This is not the 80s. There weren't mass school shootings in the 80s. And who's paying for this attorney? She keeps saying that it's her son's attorney. Does her son make enough money on his side job or his part-time job to pay for an attorney?
A lot of you are saying things like she needs sensitivity training. They're talking about you, Pam, and you need to follow authority. I've just got a few seconds left, Pam, but it's pro bono, right? An attorney has volunteered to help the family with this. Is that right?
We have a Wisconsin Caring Corporation, which is run by Nick Clark, and they're 100% nonprofit, but they do have donations that come in, and so it's being funded by basically Wisconsin Carry and its members, which we are members of also.
Oh, we're not that far away from you here in the Chicago area. You're just a little north of Madison. I think a lot of people are going to be following this story. Good luck to you, and I hope you can join us again, all right?
All right. Thank you.
Pam, thanks for your time today. That's Pam Scheneker. She's that boy's mom.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Our HVAC said,
here's John Williams.
Could I get a break here? We went from using the furnace to using the air conditioner in just a few days.
So true.
Lord have mercy.
Welcome to Chicago. It's 208. This is John in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And if your HVAC system is talking to you, should you talk back? It's 208. Thanks again to Pam Scheneker. Her son Matthew is the young man going to high school in Wisconsin. He often wears T-shirts that celebrate guns. The love T-shirt he had, each letter was spelled out using different weapons, a handgun, an AR-15, a hand grenade, and knives, and they all spelled out love. After Parkland, his principal said, we'd appreciate it if you didn't wear that anymore. He still is, but only because they're suing the principal, and they have right now an injunction, a court injunction that allows the kid to continue to wear the shirts until they resolve whether or not he has the right to wear shirts that the school feels are disruptive. Some of the texts during the news included these. All of the texts that it seems like we read while she was on the air were critical of her and her son. And then I get this. As a legal gun owner in far western Kane County, I support this young man totally. I'm more offended by inner city kids walking around with their underwear hanging out. John, as a counselor and teacher, I'm telling you, this boy Matthew needs help. From 815, I support the kid. The principal is hungry with power. Matt's First Amendment rights should not be impacted. From 708, Pam and Matthew, stick to your guns. America supports you. You did nothing wrong. This is the one that I think is probably reflective of what a lot of you think. From 224, that kid is probably entitled legally to wear that shirt, but dang, are they tone deaf. So that's where that is. So we'll probably visit with her again down the road. So we were doing our Saturday show. I'm on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon. I hope you listen to me after Mr. Fix-It does his thing. And we were talking about that Prince Charles and Princess Diana wedding cake, which is up for auction. I misread the caption when I was talking about it earlier, but it's from Charles and Diana's wedding, July 29th, 1981. And I guess it's a chauffeur. Somebody grabbed a piece of the wedding cake. So they have Princess Diana's wedding cake slice. And then it comes in a nice box, and they're auctioning it off. They think they're going to get, how much would you guess they're going to get for this? How much would you pay for a slice of Diana's wedding cake?
$50,000.
$50,000. What do you say?
I already know, so I think I'm disqualified.
You are. Michael Jackson's white glove sold for $480,000. But that was well-known and iconic.
Yeah.
As important as Princess Di is, it's not like people all remember the slice of wedding cake. So it's a slice of wedding cake. Let's assume that it's for real, the actual wedding cake, and you get to own it. I'm not sure what you're going to do with it when you get it. It's 37 years old.
Well, how does it even stay preserved? Isn't it melted and
a lot of people
mush?
Still have their wedding cake slices.
What?
In their, they put them in their freezers and they leave them there for decades.
Holy moly.
Tradition is you leave it in there for a year and then you finish it. You eat it 1 year later. It's amazing how well they'll keep. You feel free to tell me how long you've had your wedding cake in your freezer. I'll bet we've got some that have had them for more than 10 years. And I don't know if you've tried it after 10 years. I'd be curious about that. Because Brenda and I vowed that we would keep our wedding cake slice in the freezer for the year. And then after a year, we would celebrate 1 year of marriage. And then about 3 months in, we were kind of jonesing for something sweet.
Grab the cake, baby.
Said, well, let's celebrate 3 months, 4 days. Boom! Ate that cake, and it was really good.
Why didn't you just get something sweet from somewhere else?
That was before somewhere else was invented. They had that cake right there, and we're like, bam!
Spontaneous.
It was the joy of just saying, let's rip into it.
It would have been bad if you ate it without her. Like, I was home alone.
No.
I was hungry.
The game was on. You weren't around. I just said, what the hell? I'll have the cake. I'll get you another cake tomorrow.
It's good that you did it together.
I know, right. It's so like opening your presents on Christmas Eve, which I never did. I'm not that guy. But we went ahead and did it. But I know some of you were able to hold off and then some. But I asked on Saturday's show, and I'm asking you now, is there something else strange which you have kept and collected? Because, well, it's not that strange that you might keep or collect, if you will, your slice of wedding cake. I think if you pay money for somebody else's, now you've entered strange. And in this case, they think that it's going to get $1,000, somewhere between $800 and $1,200, which, frankly, I think I might take a gander at that. I mean, are you serious? I can have Princess Diana's wedding cake for $1,000? I've spent money on dumber things than that.
I got a bridge to sell you then.
You don't believe it's really the slice of wedding cake, do you, Pam?
Nope.
I don't know how you... I guess you could do a DNA test, but I don't know if their
Who
lips have
that?
Ever touched it. I don't know. I don't know.
I saved a piece of my prom dress. Anybody want it? I'll sell it. I got a piece of my car I'll sell right now.
Really? Some prom dress fabric?
Yes, because for a long time, I actually saved the entire dress. It was an actual wedding dress that they had imported for me.
Wow.
And I knew that was probably the only wedding dress I was ever going to get.
So I finally
threw it away, but I saved like some cuttings from it.
I get that. I think some people still have swatches of the baby blanket that their kids first slept in. My son is 29 years old. When he was born, we had to put on a hospital gown, you know, pants and a shirt to go into the delivery room and hold him. I still have those pants that I wore.
Aww,
and I wear them
so
as I wear them as pajamas 5 nights. Think about that. I have worn those as pajamas almost every night for 29 years straight.
They're durable.
I'm like, I don't know who made these things, but go USA. Those are dang good durable pants. Did you say you also have a part of your car?
Well, I'm still driving the first car I ever paid off.
So it's a bunch of parts all just held together.
No, it's in the parking lot.
Wow. How old is that car?
It is a 1999, and it has more than 300. Well, am I at 300 yet? No, almost 300,000. Nice. Like 390-some. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So Joe Brand told this story. Kevin Powell's in the sports office. He probably knows this one. You may comment if you like. Maybe you've got a sports observation about this. But, Elif, can you play Joe Brand's story of a strange thing collected? Here's from Saturday's show.
So in 2001, the Diamondbacks won the World Series. It was Game 7 against the Yankees, a very impressive World Series, obviously the heartbreak of 9/11. And the game-winning hit was hit by Luis Gonzalez. The next spring, he was chewing on a piece of gum in a spring training game, spit it out. A fan asked a security guard to pick up that piece of gum, gave it to him. He sold it for 10 grand.
That wins.
He donated apparently all the money to his high school.
Wow.
But yeah, 10 grand for a chewed piece of bubble gum.
You know, there's a lot of things that may give you pause there, like a guy who would think to do that and then would put it up for auction. I guess the real remarkable thing is
who bought it?
Exactly.
Who knew that it was authentic?
Where is it
DNA
today?
Testing?
There's Pam's problem. She wants the DNA on the gum to make sure
I
it's
totally
real.
Want the DNA.
What
do you, me some PCR.
What are you, a journalist,
whatever.
For crying out loud? Did you know that story, Kevin, by the way?
You know, I think Joe had actually told that to me before. But yeah, there's some odd sports stuff. I think it was Barry Sanders signed a urinal that he used. I don't know if that one's fact or if that's fake news or real news. But there's all sorts of odd things like that.
Well, whatever happened to the ball that Chris Bryant threw across the diamond to get the third out of the World Series? Didn't that go missing for a while? Am I remembering that right?
The Cubs have said, I believe it's locked in a safe. They haven't exactly been specific where exactly it is.
Okay.
So I don't blame him. Keeping that thing nice and safe. And obviously, I think a Curt Schilling sock, something like that sold. I mean, that's not really a collection, but that's a weird thing that was auctioned off.
I think that's on point. I mean, A, weird thing to collect. And B, so I get the history of it, sort of like a Princess Diana piece of cake or the chewing gum after chewing gum's a stretch. But the greater curiosity for me is the person that would say, yeah, and I've got $10,000 for that. Honey, I'm just checking online our bank account. What's this $10,000 debt? What did you buy? A used car? A tuition of college for our son? No, you bought a sock. You bought a sock.
Yeah, but it's not just any normal sock. The sock matters.
He said to his attorney during the divorce proceedings.
There's blood on this one. Look, it's cool.
That's your blood, fella. We need that $10,000. All right, here's a couple of phone calls. Dave, you're on WGN. Hi, Dave. Jump in there. What do you want to say?
Good afternoon, King John.
Hey.
Just recently, they have every so often they have a decoy show and auction in St. Charles at the Pheasant Run.
Oh, yeah, duck decoys, yeah.
Yes. It was in Dale Bowman's column in the Sun-Times. The winning decoy was auctioned for $212,000.
Yeah, that's not how I'm spending a quarter of a mil. Do you know how much money the average person makes in a lifetime? I just saw this yesterday. Dave, how much money does the average person earn in a lifetime?
It's called Not That.
Wow. Quarter mil. All right. Thanks, Dave. It's $1 million. So would you spend what? And obviously the person that spends $224,000 on it made more than $1 million in their life. But wow. Wow. I don't know if $1 million sounds like a lot or not a lot to you. But if you work for 20 years at $50,000 a year or 50 years for $20,000 a year or 25 years for $40,000 a year, you get the idea. It comes to about $1 million. Terry, you're on WGN. What's up? You're on the air.
Hi. John, can you hear me?
I sure can. What do you say?
I wanted to share a story, a sweet story about my grandmother's wedding cake. She was married in 1912, and apparently in those days, people boxed up small pieces, and that was your wedding favor. I still have that, and it's remarkably preserved. I never put it in the refrigerator. It has just stayed in this box. It's hard as a rock, but it is still well preserved. And to add to that story, it was sweet. I didn't realize it, but I picked the same date for my wedding. And then I wore my grandmother's wedding gown, which was also very special. My own mother had worn that dress as well. And then first granddaughter came along, and we took that wedding gown and made it a christening gown for the baby.
That's nice. That's so thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know, and not to take away from your story, but here's something you could have done that would have been even more special. You take that, however, how old was that wedding cake?
It's from 1912, so,
okay,
so 106 years.
So you take this 100-year-old wedding cake, which is hard as a rock, but you could have made croutons out of that and used it in the salad.
Hey, there you go. We'll have to remember that for the next one.
Well, what a nice story. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
You bet. Thank you.
Have a good day. John, my mom did not know the tradition since we're from Germany. After 1 year, I asked her for the cake, and she said, oh, we ate that. John, I'm 67 years old, and I have the baby blanket my mother made for me. John, I still have a piece of our wedding cake, and we will be married 49 years in July. I never opened the container. And on they go. We'll be leaving the Tribune Tower soon, and when we leave, I'm going to miss the opportunity to recognize a face on Michigan Avenue, turn on a microphone, and say hello to a listener, a friend, or sometimes both. That's happening right now. Hi, Rick Nelson. How are you?
I'm well, John. How are you?
What do you do for a living?
I am the restaurant critic for the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
And what are you doing in town?
I'm here for the James Beard Awards.
This is Rick Nelson. He does the restaurant reviews in Minneapolis for the Star Tribune up there. And he, are you a voting member?
I am.
Yeah. He's one of the best restaurant critics in America and also a really good writer and radio talker. You are on my show often. There's a guy named Phil Vitale in town, and he comes on my show like you used to.
I love Phil Vitale, and I'm glad to hear that you're speaking with him. That's great.
It's my privilege to talk to guys like you. So real quick before I let you go, nice to see you. You look great.
Really great to see you.
And have you had a chance to eat anywhere in Chicago?
I've been to a couple places. I was at Monteverde for a brilliant lunch yesterday, and I was at Elska last night for dinner.
Monteverde for lunch yesterday.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
You have to go. It was just my favorite lunch in a year. It was so great.
No kidding. Monteverde.
Yeah.
And then where did you have dinner last night?
Last night at Elska, a modern Danish restaurant.
Elska, yeah. I think Phil likes that place, too. What
yes,
did you
he
say?
Does. I had kind of an uneven experience, but there were things about it that I loved. So, yeah.
Well, it's nice to have you in town. You picked a good day to come to our city.
Oh, it's a beautiful. Chicago has never looked better.
Stay well, Rick.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Rick Nelson writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Okay, so where are we here on WGN Radio? We're taking calls about strange things that you have kept, right, over the years? Where do we go next here, Ms. Garris? Let's take Pat on line two. Hey, Pat, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm fine.
What's up?
I have my mom's autograph book. I told your woman who answered the phone that it was from high school graduation. It's actually from eighth grade. And in it is a signature and a writing. It says, "Dear Louise, I'm not so good at writing a rhyme, but I hope to be your husband sometime. Mr. Louis Koza," who happens to be my dad, who wrote in her eighth grade book that he hoped to marry her. So I have to keep this. They're both gone.
Yeah, no kidding. What year was that?
1934.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The funny thing, too, is my mother used to always tell us that her mother could never write her name. She always wrote an X. But I see a wish in her for her from her, that signed "Your Mother" to my daughter. And I don't, you know, maybe someone else wrote it. I don't know. Hmm. But my mom only had one mother.
Yeah, no kidding, right.
Divorced, yeah.
Well, interesting. Pat, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to go from you. Elif said take line four. That's Barbara. Jump in there, Barbara. What did you want to say? Hey, Barbara. Ground control to Barbara. Barbara says she ate her son's wedding cake that she was freezing for 1 year. Is that right? You're not supposed to do that. You get to eat your wedding cake. You don't get to eat somebody else's wedding cake. And on they go.
Well, if you want to eat your wedding cake, you have to hold on to it yourself. Mom can't do it for you.
Good point. I think there's something to that. You can't just farm that out to somebody and then say, hey, where's the wedding cake? If they get hungry for some cake and they got cake in the freezer, it's very difficult for some people to not eat cake. John Williams here. Last couple of texts about strange things you have kept or collected. John Rizzo, I was asking what happened to the ball that Bryant threw across the field to Anthony to end the World Series a couple years ago. John Rizzo put the ball in his pocket after catching it from Bryant and then presented it to the Ricketts family at the rally. Okay. John, my wife kept all of our kids' lost teeth and our dog's teeth. Okay, that jumps the shark. John, my daughter will soon be 27 and she still sleeps with remnants of her baby blanket. Did you see the story about the couple of kids that wanted to check out the Colorado State University campus? So there's two young men, and they're actually part of a, what was it? What was the tribe that they belonged to? It wasn't Navajo. It was Mohawk. So there's two young men. They're brothers. They're aged 17 and I think 19. They're part of the Mohawk tribe. I don't know where they live, except that I think they live in New Mexico, but I'm not sure if they live on a reservation or in some town. Anyway, they thought that they would check out Colorado State University. So they emailed the school, and they said, okay, your tour is coming up on such and such a date and time. Be on campus. So they get in the car. They drive about 7-8 hours up there, and then they join the tour, which was already in progress. You know how there's usually a student walking people around, and the parents are usually up front asking good questions, and the students are usually a step or two behind the parents with their heads down going, oh, I can't believe these people. So that's kind of what one of those two campus tours looks like. And these two young men who are wearing black t-shirts, but I don't think there was anything peculiar or particular about their appearance. They had blue jeans on, looked like rock and roll style t-shirts. One of them had longer hair than the other, but that's how they looked. So anyway, they come upon the crowd of people that are doing the tour. They joined it already in progress. And one of the moms, who was probably up front and was dressed for hiking and was asking meaningful questions about tuition and academic assistance. So one of the moms notices that these two young men have joined the group. She's a little alarmed. And she calls 911.
If it's nothing, I'm sorry, but it actually made me like feel sick. And I've never felt like that.
Are they white males?
I think they're Hispanic. I believe one of them for sure. He said he's from Mexico.
The brothers are musicians and members of the Mohawk tribe. They drove about 7 hours from their home in New Mexico to take the tour. Officers let the 17 and 19-year-olds go only after they showed an email confirming their tour schedule.
Play that again just so I can hear the very first of it, Ella. The beginning, she said she felt sick to her stomach. She said, if there's nothing to this, fine, but I just feel like I should tell you all.
If it's nothing, I'm sorry, but it actually made me like feel sick, and I've never felt like that.
So that's the mom. And then the dispatcher says, are they white guys? She says, no, I think they're Mexican or whatever.
He said he's from Mexico.
Yeah.
New Mexico in the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sort of touched by these young men, a 17 and 19-year-old brother who say, hey, let's go check out that school. Let's drive. We'll go check out the campus on our own. Don't you wish your kids would do that? And there they are on their own joining the tour, only then to have the cops show up. Asked to see the email. And by the way, I was thinking about the Starbucks Philadelphia story when I was watching this morning, because my view of when the police arrived in Philadelphia was that everybody was pretty chill about it, right? Like the lady behind the counter at Starbucks overreacted. I don't know what her deal was, but she calls the cops. The police show up. Those two guys stand up. They weren't screaming. They weren't resisting. The cops seemed to be pretty, there was about a dozen cops there, right? And then they all kind of walk out, and you know how that story ends. In this case, the police officer shows up, and he says, hey, talk. He looks at the email. He says, okay, well, thank you for showing that to me. Sorry for the inconvenience. You can rejoin the group. I mean, that's what it was like in this case.
I just hope the woman was relieved after that, because you got a feel for her being nervous around those guys, right? I mean, what was she nervous about? I don't get it.
Can't help you on that. I cannot help you on that. I cannot help you on that. Thank God they weren't Muslims, right? But here's the thing.
It's on pins and needles, I guess.
Here's the thing. When you drive to the airport, you see signs along the way saying, if you see something, say something.
Right, that's what I thought of. But people are maybe overreacting a little bit.
But I mean, so think about that. We're all on the same page. This lady is hysterical and out of bounds, right? but at least everybody else seemed to behave reasonably thereafter. It didn't escalate into something ridiculous. The only thing that was ridiculous was this lady calling 911. I feel sick to my stomach. There's boys in this tour group, and their skin isn't completely white.
They don't look like me.
I don't know what
here.
To do.
They don't look like me.
Well,
they're not even wearing sensible sandals.
In her defense, she doesn't sound that hysterical. I think calling the cops is a pretty...
How often have you called the cops in your life? There has to be something dramatic going on in
only
your
time,
life.
I know, really. Well, the only time I... Go ahead, Violetta. What?
I've seen someone passed out where I call the cops.
Okay, fine, oh, yeah, fine,
that makes
fine.
That makes and I'm sense. Like, I don't know if he's okay or not. I don't know if he's sleeping in the grass, but I drove by and I
fair
saw this
enough.
Guy.
Right, that guy may be dead. He might be dying. Let's help him out. That's a good call.
And then I also saw a couple fighting once, I saw them going into their house, and
you know,
I called.
You know the point. The point is, those are all reasons to call 911.
But even if you just had a bad feeling about something, I mean, she did premise it with, hey, this might be nothing.
That's why
but
I'm
I just
asking.
Want to say,
so
I have to tell you about
this. Calling the police and say, you know what, I've got a little nervous feeling about this person. But they don't have the same color skin as me, so let's call the cops.
Hold on. But how do you know, right? I mean, there are the guy that was walking with bombs in his backpack before the Boston Marathon several years ago looked like just another guy, but in retrospect, he looked a little shady, and he had a hoodie, and he had a backpack, or some kid walks into a school, and he looks a little nervous. And you've got a bad feeling in your stomach and you don't say anything. You don't say anything, you don't say anything. So now this is the conundrum that some of us face, right? If you saved a terrible thing, you'd be a hero. But if you don't, then we're going to hear like this sportsman we have on the radio. And you criticize somebody who was trying to do the right thing. So how do you know?
Also, she did not say what they look like. She was asked what they look like because they need to know what the people look like when they approach the situation.
Okay,
and who
fine. Then I'm
for.
Cool with her calling it. it's like so ridiculous. It's like, I'm fine, whatever.
Well,
this is all start calling the cops now.
I know.
About these,
I know.
Anytime you feel uneasy about any situation.
I'm sorry her radar was that bad. How about that, Kevin?
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's a good way of putting it. She was, I mean, yeah, I guess we weren't there and it's easy to just criticize her and maybe this overreaction from her, but yeah.
Because you notice the only thing that the dispatch operator asked, like, okay, how will we gauge the seriousness of this is, are they white? That's the only thing they had to go on. She didn't say, well, does it look like they have weapons? Or, you know, I don't know, what else you might have used to indicate that these guys are up to no good other than they drove cross country and are a little late. The only thing she had to go on was the color of their skin. That's all, based on that phone call we heard, that's all she had.
Well, based on that clip, correct. But I'm sure that was a longer conversation.
I'm impressed, too, again, as happened in Philadelphia, that if you see something as moderately troubling as black men won't leave a Starbucks, or some Native American men have joined a college campus tour late, I'm amazed that the cops show up that quick. You know, I didn't know that cops were the... God bless you, cops. You got a lot to do. I didn't know you were storming down the street to find out what's going on in the restroom of a Starbucks. Or... and
well, yeah.
Somebody in Colorado joined a tour late. Really? You're going to respond to that?
I wonder if they also talked to the tour guide, like, hey, would you mind asking these guys, like, do they have tickets? Or I wonder if there was anything done before
right.
she just snuck
well,
off.
That's the thing. Like, everyone's so afraid to talk to other people. Like, yeah. Maybe if she just had a conversation with the guys for not even a conversation.
Right. Like hey, where
hello.
Are you guys coming from? Mexico or New
but
Mexico?
But instead, you know what? Get the phone out. Let's call this one in, guys.
And where is she calling from? Like, did she go to the bathroom?
I think she was whispering up front where she was, you know, two steps behind asking good questions of the tour guide.
Ma'am, we're going to need you to get off the phone. This is an important part of the tour. I know, I'm calling the cops right now.
I'm calling the cops. There are people behind us and they don't have white skin. Did you notice them? They're walking suspiciously. Actually, they're walking like all the other kids, but they're right there.
Get over here quickly. They're not white.
And they keep following us.
Okay, so props
we're on a tour.
Props to those two young men. Their mother has just now been able to join us. Lorraine, are you there? This is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Really good. We are absolutely perplexed by this story, Lorraine.
So are we.
And I'd hope to get you on a little sooner, so I'll just real quick ask a couple quick questions and maybe we'll catch up on another day. But my understanding is that the university has apologized. They said, come back for VIP treatment. We did not mean to you know, target these young men in any way? What's the, where are they, your sons, on this, or where are you on this story right now?
Well, first of all, it was very traumatizing for the boys and for our family, and actually, quite frankly, for our community. That kind of invitation, which is their way of making amends, it feels like returning a victim to the scene of the crime. And it's, I you know, it's something that they may eventually decide they want to go back to do, but right now it's just not our idea of making amends at this time.
Are you guys pursuing any legal action in this case?
We haven't even, I'm not going to say we haven't thought of it. There's lots of people who are trying to encourage us to go that way. But really, we're not in this. We're not exposing this for monetary gain or for attention or fame or anything like that. We're wanting to make people aware of this so that hopefully it doesn't happen to your child someday.
You know what I was likening it to before we got you on the line was what happened at the Starbucks in Philadelphia. And it's
not a lot of people have been
saying that. And, you know, maybe it's an indictment of Starbucks, but I don't know that Starbucks was a terrible company. And I don't know that Colorado State University necessarily, you know, labels Native Americans. It might have just been, you know, one silly woman. That's really all this is about. Do you think it's that?
A lot of people, some people have been saying that, but and I understand that it's not the college's fault that the woman was biased, and it's not the campus police fault that the woman was biased, but how they reacted to her call was wrong. It was inappropriate.
What do you mean by that?
So they took the call, and according to their policy, they have to respond to all 911 calls, regardless of how, you know, trivial it may seem. But when the police officers track them down, the proper procedure should have been that he approached the tour guide, not that he approached the children. He should have approached the tour guide, mm-hmm. made her aware that a call had been made. And were there any problems within the group? She would have been able to confirm that, yes, they had checked in at admission, they had registered a week in advance, and that, yes, they were on her list of tour guests. And then none of this had to happen. But their immediate response was to frisk my boys.
Yeah.
And make them feel uncomfortable, unwanted. The tour, and you, if you watch the body cam video, mm-hmm. you can see the tour walking down the stairs past them, not even giving them a second glance, and continuing to walk like they were just nothing.
Yeah, I saw that, and I thought, even though this ended without much incident, how humiliating. You're standing there,
right.
And everybody's looking at you, and they're assuming the worst, even though you've done nothing wrong.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
All right, well, our best to your sons. You know, I had a couple kids that went to college, and we had to lead them on tours sometimes. I like the initiative of two young men who decide they're going to drive 8 hours cross-country to check out a campus on their own. Everything I know about them so far sounds pretty good.
Yes, we've been getting thousands of messages of well wishes from people all over the world. It's a little bit overwhelming for us, but for the most part, the response has been positive for us.
Lorraine Gray, our best to your sons. Maybe we'll visit again and see what happens with all of this. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
It's 2:52. This is WGN. Anna DeVlantis is in the studio.
Happy Monday, John. You got something? Mother's Day is coming up, and so for those of us looking for Mother's Day gifts, we have Jason Knowles coming from Channel 7 to tell you that before you buy the perfume or some of these luxury goods that seem reasonable, mm-hmm. watch out for the scams. Watch out for the fake goods that you might want to pick up as you're out and about.
Here's a tip. If they're selling you those luxury goods on the sidewalk,
then that often is the tip-off to the rip-off. As Steve Burness likes to say at the Better Business Bureau, there are a few signs, but he's going to dig even deeper than that about going online and that kind of thing when you're in that world of purchasing.
Oh, yeah, right. right,
mom.
Online.
Yeah, what about buying out the back of a truck? Is that normally a sign of something fishy?
Because it could have been just they had some
not
extra
real product.
It was a great deal.
It's not real product. I'm going to go with when that happens.
I think, though, there's some people who are happy to buy real good fake product.
So cheap.
It's like, I got a great fake product. You don't know. I do. Hello, Prada.
Yeah, I had
mom might not know.
That's the thing. Mom might be, wow, Violetta, what
a
gift.
As a service to our listeners, I think you guys should do a segment where we tell you where to buy the really good fake stuff.
You'd like that one?
Give it to your mom for Mother's Day.
Yeah, wrap
Prada,
it up.
Prada, Gucci, whatever she needs, whatever
Make it
she
look
likes.
Like the real deal. Sure. Mom won't be able to tell the difference.
I was once invested in a company that did
knockoffs.
No, the opposite. That did it repurposed the real original.
Oh, repurposed the original.
Yeah, like resold.
Yeah, we're talking about
So the real handbag, but just someone else would buy.
Yeah,
it.
And it was a way. It was like this is before.
It's called Goodwill.
Well, it was
Judy getting the plug in. Where's the bell when we need it?
Ding ding ding.
But it was sort of like Pret-a-Porter, places like that.
Sure.
And then that's why we went out of business, because Pret-a-Porter
came
into business and chose not to buy us. But it was all high end fashion stuff. And I got to tell you something about the knockoffs. People who know the knockoffs, the tells are really easy to figure it out. Huh. And even as much as the Chinese have really tried so hard. The China people, as another senator once, as a future senator once said, there is. I'm going to just tell you that it is incredible. Like what the high end of designers put in to make it almost impossible for them to do it
to counterfeit. Yeah.
So I just want to say, so if you're wearing, if you want to wear that sort of stuff, you want to carry that sort of stuff, and just know that people know, they'll know. Don't know, even if it looks.
But sometimes you have to go inside and look at the serial number and the little tag in there. I mean, I don't know. That might take a little bit of a nosy friend.
Sometimes it's on the stitching, but I'm that guy. Violetta,
turn it over for inspection.
Let me see your Prada bag for a second.
It's not real.
My mom's already holding it. She's fine.
All right, I got to get out of the way.
Okay.
So you all have a really dandy show, and welcome back.